You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back here on Fantasy Sports Today, live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, hour number two. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. Got Sean Engel making it happen downstairs. So, George, I think as you get ready for these draft seasons, you always start to find out who is your guy, right? Or you got a couple of them. They're just your guy. And it kind of can get increased when you feel like you're getting extreme value on someone. You feel like everybody maybe is just missing out on a fantastic opportunity, and you find yourself consistently drafting him. And I'm going to move over to the Dolphins-Panthers game because I'm starting to feel like CJ Anderson is my guy. I just feel like people are missing out a bit on what could be a fantastic opportunity. So let me just pose this question to you. Last year, Christian McCaffrey versus Jonathan Stewart in terms of total touches, so carries plus catches. How big do you think the gap between McCaffrey to Jonathan Stewart was last year?
First of all, I'm going to say I'm on board with you about CJ Anderson. Mm-hmm. So you have an ally. I don't think the gap was all that big offhand. I didn't check, so I don't know. I'll say it was, I would give McCaffrey the edge, but it'd be a small edge, and maybe not even much of one at all.
So it was small, but it was plus +9 for Jonathan Stewart. Stewart saw 198 carries to McCaffrey's 117. Now, that gap is big, but on the face, it doesn't look as big as the gap, which was McCaffrey's 80 receptions to Stewart's measly 8 receptions. And you will get no argument. I would much rather have an extra 70 catches than an extra 80 rushing attempts, of course. But nobody is here going to be banging the table saying draft CJ Anderson over Christian McCaffrey. And McCaffrey's looked really, really good. And we're going to talk about that. But I just look at last night's game. And McCaffrey, 5 carries, 4 catches, 9 total touches. CJ Anderson, 2 catches, 8 carries, 10 total touches, where even if the McCaffrey workload goes up a bit in the carries department, last year, if it was plus +9 for Jonathan Stewart, and you get a better back there in CJ Anderson, you're still going to be able to get in this mid-round range where there's a lot of question mark running backs going, a guy in CJ Anderson who is getting touches that are comparable to Christian McCaffrey, who is going high within drafts. And I understand that the catches are what push it there. 100%, I totally get that. But I don't know how many backs in that CJ Anderson range you're seeing with this type of opportunity.
I totally agree. CJ Anderson is a better Jonathan Stewart. You know, Jonathan Stewart was really on his last legs last year, and he still is with the Giants this year. Well, difference is I don't think he'll see anywhere, even the amount of carries he had last year with the Giants. CJ Anderson is going to get his opportunities. I understand. Listen, I know why people are down on CJ. I get it. Cam Newton rushes in those plunges, you know, and I thought last year they would be more cautious with Cam with the concussions that he's had, and they wouldn't do it. They did anyway. I think Carolina realizes, yes, we'd like to be careful with Cam, but he's also the only reason we're winning games. You know, and without Cam, we might as well just let him play the way he plays. Throw caution to the wind there. Maybe not the smartest thing on the planet, but that's how they do it. So I think he'll continue to do that this year. But McCaffrey can't run through tackles, not on a consistent basis. If they do that, he won't last the season. He won't last the game. You know, I know North Turner, everyone's excited about him being there too, and all the magic he's done for certain offenses. I have no doubt McCaffrey will catch a truckload of passes out of the backfield. No doubt at all. In PPR leagues, he's borderline top 10 for me. You know, he's just outside of it. No issues with that at all. But to think he's going to get those plunges from inside the 5, no. It just doesn't make sense. Because you have CJ Anderson, who's very good at that, by the way. And why would you want McCaffrey to take that beating? You don't want him to. That's why, you know, let's say it's 80 catches for whatever amount of yardage. Unless he catches a 12-yard touchdown pass, you know, his end zone celebrations are going to be few and far between, because he's probably going to have between 4 and 6, unless you get lucky. He's just, you know, all year long, he's breaking lots of long touchdowns. You know, that's great. That's unlikely, but it'd be great for you if it did. I like McCaffrey, truly do. But you're banking on those receptions, and you want him in a PPR league. A standard league, I got to tell you, Kev, I want little to nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he becomes significantly less valuable when you get into those standard leagues. And the one thing to keep in mind with C.J. Anderson, again, last year Jonathan Stewart had one rushing carry of 20 yards or more. C.J. Anderson last year had 7. So I think when you look at the floor, again, if last year Jonathan Stewart's are 206 carries and they're now getting a significantly better running back, it feels like the floor for this guy is 200 total touches. And I think he should see more work in the receiving game than Jonathan Stewart. Now, again, he's not going to come anywhere near what McCaffrey will in the receiving game. And I don't want to make it sound like I am comparing the two when I am trying to say that people should be drafting C.J. Anderson over Christian McCaffrey. I've not lost my mind. What I'm telling you is there is a running back out there who is currently, right now on Fantasy Pros, the 40th running back off the board, who's going to get 200 carries. And last year, Jonathan Stewart had 6 rushing touchdowns, which was tied with Cam Newton. So again, if C.J. Anderson being the better running back, what a boost that could be for this Carolina offense and something that they want to actually rely on. And again, C.J. Anderson last year, total number of touches, again, attempts plus catches in Denver was 273. So yes, that number peels back, but maybe the efficiency then goes up just a little bit more. As much as I don't love Carolina's offensive line, it's not like Denver was boasting out a top 5, top 10 unit last year. So I don't think that that's much of a reason to be down at all. So that is, I'm going to continuously bang the table for C.J. Anderson, because I just think that you are getting incredible value on this guy right here. And again, we would never wish this, but if McCaffrey went down, C.J. Anderson then has RB1 potential.
I like C.J. Anderson. I like him a lot. I think you mentioned the value you can get for him around RB40 is fantastic. Is he going to get a plethora of touches? No, but you're still talking. Would it shock me at the end of the year if his over-under on touchdowns is 8 and he even gets more than that? Wouldn't shock me. You know, so he's a nice guy. He's probably not someone you want starting for you week in and week out, but he's a nice injury filler. Bye weeks, I'll take the chance that he scores a touchdown that week. You mentioned it. I know Carolina's offensive line is taking some hits, but Denver's offensive line was far from great last year. I mean, far from great. So it's not like he takes a significant downgrade there. I like C.J. Anderson. I think he's getting a bum rap because of Cam Newton and McCaffrey, but I think there's value there. And that's the most important thing. We're not talking about an RB1 here. We're talking about value. For where he's being drafted, he has value. We all, you know, I make the joke all the time. Any running back with a pulse is valuable. Yeah. And he has more than a pulse. He actually has a heartbeat too. You know, so yeah, I think C.J. Anderson, I wouldn't mind him being on my team. I said I don't want him being one of my top 2 starters. If that ended up happening, yeah, then I probably went running back 0 strategy, in which case that's fine. If you these are the guys you're going to end up with in an RB0 strategy. You'll end up with C.J. Anderson starting for you. You're hoping and praying for injuries and other things to occur here. But he's being undervalued. He is.
Now, funny enough, on the side of Christian McCaffrey, I'm actually starting to get pretty high on him as well. Again, speaking in terms of PPR, because McCaffrey, we saw him pop that big 71-yard run against the Dolphins in this game, and we're still seeing him used heavily in the pass game, and something that we know North Turner was brought in to try and make him a more efficient passer, and one of the best ways to do that is to target the running back and put him in favorable matchups, which McCaffrey is one of the best pass catchers at the running back position within the entire league. So I'm looking at McCaffrey, and if he can pop a couple of big ones and he's able to capitalize now on a couple of more targets, carries, he was at 117. Let's just say that number can go up to 130. And I don't think the receptions are going anywhere. I tell you, I was at a point where I was nervous. Maybe it goes down a bit because now they add Greg Olsen for a full season and because they add DJ Moore, first-round wide receiver that they drafted. But I'm wondering if McCaffrey's going to even go up in total targets. So I definitely think he goes up in total touches. I'm looking at Christian McCaffrey right now. He's the 11th running back off the board. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think that's about accurate for McCaffrey. As a PPR league, he is, and some would say he's PPR gold. Yeah. You know he's going to catch. I mean, we said 80. That's five catches a game. That doesn't seem like that many. Mm-hmm. You know, it really doesn't when you think about it. That he really, only five? But that's what 16 times five comes out to, 80 catches. So we know Cam's not great with his accuracy. You know, without McCaffrey, his percentage being below than what it normally is. Olsen. All right, he had the broken ankle last year. But, you know, even before that, he looked slow. You know, we joked about all the Cowboy broadcasters. Remember, he was right up there with Witten for that job. You know, and what does Bill Parcells like to say? If you're thinking about retirement, you're already retired. Olsen's definitely lost a step. You know, he's out of all the tight ends we talked about in the earlier on the show about where they what tiers they're in. Olsen's the one that worries me the most because what if, you know, he has lost that step? You know, he did come on late last season where he started to play better. We look at the Olsen of old, but I'm still not completely sold on him. He's the kind of guy – I have him and Ingram really close to my rankings, Kev. And if I had – if there were six leagues and they were both right up there, I was ready to draft one, I'd probably split it up. I wouldn't want Olsen in too many, and I probably wouldn't want Ingram in too many. Ingram, I just worry about targets. Olsen, I worry about, is this the beginning of the end? You know, it's that old argument, I'd rather be a year too late than a year too early. On somebody. I wonder if he's going to have some issues here. That being said, he is still the security blanket of a Cam. He's still going to get his targets. I just don't know if he'll be open as much. I see Carolina have more speed in this offense, which is where you mentioned the wide receiver comes in handy because Funchess certainly doesn't add all that much speed there. But like I said, I do have concerns about this team overall, but McCaffrey's not the guy I'm truly concerned about because I think he'll get his. I think he's the guy who has to get his. He has to get his catches. My only issue is touchdowns. You know, that's why I understand the league. I'm not that interested. He's not going to get a whole bunch of carries between the tackles. He is what he is. He's a weapon. He's a weapon they'll line up just about anywhere. And Norv Turner will use him. But Norv is smart enough to know if you brush him 10 times between the tackles each game, he'll be out for the year by week 7.
And I think the one thing that was a very encouraging sign from year one, and some people were worried about it, is that they seemed like they had a good understanding of the best way for them to use Christian McCaffrey. On the other side of that game with the Dolphins, I think the big thing is likely Kenyon Drake, who looked pretty good in this game. He's currently the 17th running back off the board in PPR, according to Fantasy Pros. You know, the Frank Gore situation is odd. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, I was laughing at people that were drafting Frank Gore. I was like, there's just no way this guy doesn't fall off. He ran for, I think, 1,000 yards because he's Frank Gore, and this is what Frank Gore does. And I think, as strange as it feels to worry about job security for a young back like Kenyon Drake, who was really, really good last year where they handed the reins to him, just it being Frank Gore, and I think Miami maybe not being the most trustworthy of situations there. You know, I have my concerns, and I don't own a lot of Kenyon Drake. Honestly, I'm not positive I own any at the moment. So are you... When it comes to Kenyon Drake, what's your biggest concern, or are you not worried at all?
Oh, I'm worried. This team's bad. I mean, so with Scott Engel yesterday on the Road of Experts in the morning show, and I asked Scott, you know, besides Buffalo, name me the next worst team in the NFL. You know, off the top of your head. And for his first team, it was Miami, and it was mine too. And, yeah, you know, you're hearing reports from the beat writers that this team's a dumpster fire, especially on defense right now. And I bring that up because, well, if your defense is bad, that means you're going to be trailing in a lot of games. It means you can't run the ball. Right? Can't run if you're behind. You're going to have to put the ball in the air. And I understand Drake has some value catching the ball to the backfield as well. You know, but he's not Christian McCaffrey catching the ball to the backfield. He's not that kind of guy. So if they're trailing, they can't run the ball, where's Drake's value? I'm not, as you said, you're not sure you have him. I'm positive I don't have him in any leagues. And I'm not taking him in any leagues. He would have to, the value would still have to be there for me to take him right now. And it's really not the player I'm upset at, I'm mad at. It's more the, you know, the situation he's in. Mm-hmm. I don't think Miami's going to be a good team. I think this team smells like 4-12, 5-11, trailing in a lot of games, throwing the ball in the second half. And I don't think that's good for them either, because Tannehill sucks too. So that's my issue with this whole entire team. I hate Tannehill. Always have. I just don't think he's a very good quarterback. If I was Miami, I probably would have moved on by now. I think now maybe they couldn't because the quarterback they wanted didn't fall to them. Whatever, that's fine. I get that. But I think I would have moved on and saved saved as much money as possible. With his salary, Tannehill's, his contract, I should say, it's less and less as far as salary cap, at dead money. So they could have moved on and not truly been hit hard. But not that it would have mattered. Then there's no one else out there for them to grab. Anyway, that would have really changed things here. Back to Drake. Listen, I have him as a running back too. You know, so, and I don't have any issues with someone taking him where they're taking him as a, you know, fifth round or so, but I'm not touching him. I don't like him. I don't think he's all that great a player, and I hate the situation he's in.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line for me. I hate the fact that in the second half, I don't know how many touches he's going to get. You know, I just don't know. I have him right now as a running back 17, and I have guys like Derrick Henry behind him who I'll probably move ahead. Alex Collins, Duke Johnson, Lamar Miller. He's in that range where these guys all have major question marks for me. Yeah, now, question, he's at the top right now of the question marks, or major question marks, because I have Joe Mixon just ahead of him. As far as true starting number one backs, Mixon, Howard, McCoy are all ahead of him. But Drake, I just can't get on board. You got Frank Gore there as well. I don't think Frank Gore's a true backup where they're just not going to use him, you know, maybe every now and then. I think he'll get 8 to 10 touches a game, whether it's catches or running the ball. They played up this guy, Kalen Ballage, that he's going to be at least a goal line threat. I understand he's not playing well right now, but there's just too many problems there. Drake, he's somebody else. I'm going to let him be their problem.
George, I want to ask you about these wide receivers when we come back, but we spent a lot of time on it. So I just, during the break, think about who leads this team in targets, by how much of a gap, and how sure are you? Talking more Miami Dolphins next here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Like a great pass rusher, the Roto experts will help you sack your fantasy football competition. When you register for their exclusive Edge fantasy package, you get a cheat sheet generator plus a player database with sortable projections and rankings from the best in the business. And you can join the fantasy conversation in the 24/7 Slack chat channel. Visit rotoexperts.com to register for the exclusive Edge fantasy package and enter the promo code FNTSY and you get a 10% discount. That's the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge fantasy football package, promo code FNTSY.
As per usual, just making it happen downstairs. And look, football's just around the corner, as you can tell by this show, but we are still giving away World Series tickets on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and this time it is to the winner of free DFS Baseball Contest. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. Now, while 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, which is nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. You can find out how you can help the cause while winning 2018 World Series tickets playing free daily fantasy baseball by going to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That is dailyroto.com/DKMS. Your tickets for the World Series and a blood cancer patient's ticket. Life. So, George, I try to set it up there just to quickly talk about how this target share can look for these wide receivers, because I'm not sure who it is, but one of these guys is going to provide massive value in where they are currently being drafted. Devonta Parker right now is the 42nd wide receiver off the board. Danny Amendola is the 73rd. Wide receiver off the board. Kenny Stills goes at 48. And if you want to be inclusive, Albert Wilson goes at 92. So we don't see any of these wide receivers go off the board until Parker at 42. Then not far behind again, Kenny Stills at 48. Pretty big gap. 73 is Danny Amendola. And if you want to get interesting, Albert Wilson is there for you as the 92nd wide receiver off the board. As of today, how do you feel about this target share? Who do you think the guy is? How confident are you? How big is the gap?
Well, I think the guy that'll lead the team in targets there will be Jarvis Landry. Oh, wait, they traded him. Great move, Miami. Let's trade your only wide receiver. I understand Landry has his issues as far as yards after the catch and all, and maybe he's a little bit of a head problem, but still, you just went through this. Parker, Stills, Amendola, Wilson. And listen, the only reason you're putting Wilson is I think the family gave you money to talk about him. He's not in this conversation, so we'll get rid of him.
Uh-huh.
Parker's got a broken finger. I mean, and it's funny, the description is he can't catch the ball right now. Doesn't seem to catch the ball that well when his finger's healthy either. So, I mean, I think Parker is the best receiver here. I do. Most talented. But I don't see him having a big year. Once against Tannehill, Parker, I don't see it. Still seems to have the best chemistry with Tannehill. He does. Mm. But he's much better as the best ball guy. You know, for those big games where Tannehill actually does find him deep. I think it's scary for me to say this, but I think it's Amendola. If you're going to ask me who might be the most valuable in a PPR. And I said, it's immensely scary because I think he sort of replaces the Jarvis Landry role. I do. And I think he'll get his targets, he'll get his catches. It'll be nothing fantasy-wise, nothing you're going to be really dying for. You know, he may be the guy that gets his 6 catches for 42 yards. And you'll take that to 10 points. You know, because if you've got him covering for your bye week, something like that, you'll take that 10 points. Maybe he gets a touchdown every 4 or 5 games. Mm-hmm. You know, Gesicki, and Tanya likes his tight ends as well, but Gesicki's not really in that range yet where he can be relied on game in and game out. He's struggled somewhat in camp here. But to answer your question, I'll say Amendola, mainly because Parker's hurt, and I don't know what he's going to do, but I say this with zero, and I mean zero amount of confidence.
Well, look, here's the thing. I totally understand why, but this is why I do feel like this is actually an important situation fantasy-wise, because it relates to what we've kind of been talking about all show, and it's finding value. And I think what you and Scott were talking about in terms of Dolphins being one of the worst teams in the league, a lot of people feel that way about the Miami Dolphins. But you're not paying premium. So if I get a team's target leader at 42, that's fantastic value. If I get a team's target leader as the 73rd wide receiver, George, that is the greatest value in the history of value. And that's just something that, you know, we have to try to figure out, right? Because, I mean, if you're going to get 115 targets as the 73rd wide receiver overall, that's big stuff.
And that's what fantasy football is about. It's value.
Mm-hmm.
Getting guys at the right time. I'll say it again. There is generally, with your last couple of picks, you almost can't go wrong. Unless you're taking a second kicker or 2 defense or something silly like that. You just can't go wrong. All right, you take guys who are high upside. They work out. Fantastic. You're ahead of the game. They don't. You replace them with somebody, the hot guy off the waiver wire after week 1, week 2. There'll be plenty of those as well. There are every year. Guys that slip through a drift that no one saw coming. Oh, there's an injury. Now you got a new starter. Whatever. You know, so you're fine here. You want to take a shot at someone like Amendola or someone like Parker? Or Stills, for that matter. None of this bothers me. Just because I don't believe doesn't mean I won't have any of these guys, because I'll take some shots as well. That's what I do. I want to take a dartboard throw. You know, if it pays off, great. You imagine, like I said, last pick, no one's taking him anyway. You can wait forever. You know, it's not like you have to move up in your draft to take these guys. You don't. And that's how it's all about value. Like I said, for me, I think I would take Amendola because I'm more of a conservative guy. But yeah. Parker's the higher upside guy. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But we just haven't seen – we haven't seen 2 things from Parker. 1, health, and 2, the connection with Tannehill. It's just not there. And that may be because of the health. I think Parker, since he came to Miami, always had foot injuries, broken bones in his feet. Now he's got the finger injury. He's always missing time. So as much as I may not like Tannehill, it's not all his fault that the receiver can't stay on the field. But Parker is the most talented guy there. I just wonder this. You know, now, not that the number one cornerback was facing Jarvis Landry all that much anyway because he played in the slot, but all the defensive coverage is going to be geared towards Parker. Mm-hmm. You know, that means it could be a safety over the top, certainly the number one cornerback. And that raises all kinds of issues because I don't know if he can beat that kind of coverage. He certainly hasn't proven it yet at this point in his career.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be something for people to start to figure out. Let's shift over to the Chiefs-Falcons, where maybe the most exciting play thus far of the preseason was Pat Mahomes slinging it a clean 70 yards in the air. It was a 69-yard touchdown from line of scrimmage to end zone, but I watched it multiple times. Clean 70 yards of air on that touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill. This is what people have been waiting for, George. And when you get it here, people are going to be ready to get it all throughout the regular season.
Patrick Mahomes has a gun. I mean, a bazooka, actually, for an arm is really what he has. I think they said it was 73 in the air offhand. That's incredible. That's just incredible. The guy has a rocket. Any way you want to describe it, he has a rocket. I still think it's kind of silly to think that he's going to be better than Alex Smith in year one. He's played one whole NFL game in his future, in his past. You know, and that game meant nothing. It was week 17 last year. It just meant absolutely nothing. So to think he's going to be great right off the bat.
Better than Alex Smith is in Washington, or better than Alex Smith was last year?
Better than Alex Smith last year.
Gotcha.
Alex Smith in Washington is a whole new can of worms, especially when Geis went out there. But I do like Mahomes. I like his future. But I said year one, that might be asking a little too much. That being said, the Kansas City defense sucks. I mean, it looks bad right now. I mean, really, it's not what people think it used to be. You know, they lost some players here. They haven't really replaced them. I think they're going to have issues, which is going to force Mahomes maybe to put the ball in the air more than they would like from day one. You know, I think they want to really protect him with Kareem Hunt. You know, get into some second and fours, third and threes, that sort of situation. And they may not be able to do that now because they're going to have to put the ball in the air, because I think they'll be trailing in games, where I'm going with this. So that could be good for Mahomes because he'll have to put the ball in the air more. Could be bad as well because he has to put the ball in the air more. So you sort of take it, the good with the bad there. He's a guy, Kev. I play in most of my leagues now. I've realized I've become either super flex or two quarterback leagues. They're my favorite type by far. He's a guy I love as my second quarterback. If I had him as a quarterback one, though, then something went wrong. That's the thing, is I don't want to rely on him as my quarterback one, but as my quarterback two and starting for me, no issues whatsoever. I think the future is bright. One last thing I worry about here. All right, Tyreek Hill, we know what he does best. You know, running the flies, the post, he's fast, extremely fast. Sammy Watkins, really the same thing. You know, I know they're trying to make Watkins more of an intermediary guy, but someone's got to develop there, or else all he has is Kelce short and Hill deep. You know, and that's not good. That's what makes it kind of easy for defenses. So he needs Watkins to develop there. That's why I wasn't a big fan of the Watkins signing there, not because of the player, but because of what he does. I think they would have been better off with a true number two receiver who runs those kinds of routes. That would be good here. So that's a concern there. But overall, I think the offense will be solid. I do. I just don't think it'll be fantastic. And I don't think Mahomes – I can't – if you want to put him in quarterback one status, who are you taking out? Are you taking out Phillip Rivers? You taking out Ben? You know, Garoppolo falls out of your number one? Stafford? I mean, these are the guys we're talking about. Cousins, he has to replace one of these guys. Who are you taking out here? Guys who have done it year after year after year. Now, it may be my thinking, Kev, because I'm conservative when it comes to drafting, and I like looking at the back of the baseball card. Shows my age, but I look at stats online and seeing, 30 touchdowns every year. I can rely on that. Great, I'll take that guy. You know, I like knowing what I can bank on from a player. Mahomes, we don't know. You're guessing here. Maybe educated guessing, but still, you're guessing here what he's going to do this year. That's my issue. I'm more of a conservative drafter, especially with quarterbacks. I don't feel the need to take a risk here. It's so deep.
So with with your whole point in terms of the ability to trust, I don't think this is any type of take. It's going to be an explosive offense. We know that. You look at the fact that it's Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins with the arm that Pat Mahomes has. I think whether it is consistent is going to rely a lot on Kareem Hunt / Andy Reid giving Kareem Hunt the football. And I think you make a wonderful point. This defense does look like it is set up for a very difficult season. Very difficult season. And if you're listening, Tony Sincotta, they should have kept Marcus Peters, no matter how much you say they shouldn't have. And I just think that this is one of these things here now where it could set up for a lot of Kareem Hunt. But we know that this is his backfield. The bigger question mark is what you mentioned, is how positive are we that Tyreek Hill has a sizable gap when it comes to Sammy Watkins? Now, he is quicker than Sammy Watkins, without a doubt. But if you look at last year, Albert Wilson was this team's number two wide receiver. Now, Kelsey led this team in targets at 123, and that is likely to remain the same, I would think. But Albert Wilson, as a number two wide receiver, saw 63 targets. That's likely to go up, I would think, for Sammy Watkins. And Tyreek Hill saw 105. Now, Alex Smith last year threw 505 passes. As a team, they threw 543. The question then becomes, what does the attempts look like? And that, I think, is another big thing to try and figure out. Are they throwing the football more because now they're getting away from, you know, the conservative Alex Smith? Are they going to be throwing the football more because, as you mentioned again, the defense is going to be putting them in spots where they have no choice? They scale back throwing the football because they've got a rookie in there and they want to give more and more and more to Kareem Hunt to make it easier for Pat Mahomes. I think that might just be the biggest question when it comes to determining the value of Hunt, Hill, Watkins, is where do you feel confident penciling in Mahomes attempts-wise? That, to me, is the big question surrounding the Chiefs in terms of fantasy.
It's valid. It's a valid question because, once again, they could try and protect him. You know, I said it earlier, they want to put him in second four. You know, you don't want second and long, third and long, obvious passing situations because then the defense is coming after you and it'll put pressure on Mahomes and he'll have to make quicker decisions, and that's generally not a good thing. Mahomes has been up and down during camp. You know, everyone's going to see the throw from last night. I mean, everybody. And that's going to change people's opinions. But overall, he's been up and down. Mm-hmm. He's going to have some issues. The Kareem Hunt thing, I don't know what happened last season where they just forgot about him. You know, I'm a Cowboy fan. KC played Dallas last year during that stretch. The first half, well, we saw plenty of Kareem Hunt. The game was close. I think at halftime, it was within a score. It might have been 17-14, something like that. Second half, he was on a milk carton. Nowhere to be found. Yeah, I remember thinking during the game, well, did he get hurt? But he's out there sometimes, but not all. It was just weird how they didn't give him the ball, and then they continued that for, you know, a stretch there. It's like they forgot that he was on their team. It was just strange about what was going on there. I don't think they'll make that mistake this year. You know, my issue could be, though, once again, if you're trailing in the second half of games because your defense can't stop anybody, well, you know, maybe you just can't run the ball over and over again. Now, he'll catch the ball out of the backfield as well because he's good at that. But there are some worries there. Overall, I think the offense is going to be good. But I think it's a work in progress. It'll get better as Mahomes gains experience. I think you'll really see it hit maybe next year where it's, you know, once he gets that full year under his belt. Everyone thinks that just because a guy had one game last year, or even sometimes they think when a guy comes in and is good because some quarterbacks came in and were good right away. Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisberger, Deshaun Watson. You know, they were great right away. That every young quarterback's going to tear it up right away. It doesn't work that way generally. Those are anomalies. Those are more outliers than anything else. Usually young quarterbacks take a while to learn the game. The game, it's completely different from college to pro, from practice to games. The game's much faster. You know, it's just defenses are gearing to stop you. Yeah, so that's why I always worry about that. And I think Mahomes is going to need I think he's going to be a very good quarterback. I just don't think fantasy wise, you want to bank that he's going to be a very good quarterback this year to be your quarterback one in a deep, and I say it again, deep, deep quarterback pool.
On the other side of this game, we saw the Falcons offense look incredible on that first drive and was capped off by an Austin Hooper, Matt Ryan connection on a touchdown. Matt Ryan's currently the 13th quarterback off the board. So just to keep the theme in terms of valuing these quarterbacks, I think we're seeing him move up a little bit more, and it does seem to be a lot of people are ready for Matt Ryan to have a big-time bounce-back season.
I'm on the Ryan bandwagon as well. Mm-hmm. Once again, he probably won't be a quarterback one for me because it's so deep, but I love that offense. I mean, you think about it. Even if you're worried about Devonta Freeman and the concussions, and I am. No doubt I am. You know, I like the fact that they have Tevin Coleman. So even if Freeman goes out, you still got Coleman. You still have a running back. All right, you got Julio Jones. We know Julio Jones is great. You got Sanu, who's a great wide receiver two, wide receiver three. No issue there. You add Calvin Ridley. You know, now defense sort of have to pick their poison here. You know, do you want to cover Julio Jones, put a safety over the top. Then you're leaving one-on-one against everybody else, not to mention the running game, with no safety in the box. Mm-hmm. So that's a bonus here. So I really like, what's going to happen in Atlanta. I think they're going to score a ton of points there. I think Ryan does have a bounce-back year. But once again, he's in that 10 to 14 range of quarterbacks.
You heard it there from George. We come back. A couple of rookie first-round quarterbacks faced off last night. We'll talk Bills-Browns when we come back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Making it happen, guys. This election is wonderful. Makes me happy. A beautiful, beautiful Saturday. I'd like you guys know about BetDSI because it is celebrating 20 years as the industry's biggest and safest betting site. They have great customer service and fast, easy payment of winnings. You can play virtually every sport at BetDSI with hundreds of wagering options, including live in-game wagering on all major sporting events where you can make your play at any time during the day. BetDSI runs sign-up and deposit promotions year-round if you are willing to adhere to rollover requirements. For instance, for a limited time, using promo code FNTSY, BetDSI is offering up to $2,500 on your first deposit. So use promo code FNTSY and try BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com with the promo code FNTSY and head on over and start winning today. So, George, the Bills and the Browns, Josh Allen versus Baker Mayfield, a pair of very polarizing quarterbacks. I actually think that all five of these guys that went are pretty polarizing. They grab your attention. Josh Allen, the consensus, it seemed amongst most people, was he was headed straight for Bustville. And Baker Mayfield was the beloved, Heisman-winning, passionate, antics driven, but everybody was okay with it. Star at Oklahoma, who's here to save the Cleveland Browns. But neither of them currently slated to be their starters, so let us begin with their starters. I will say, of all of the things that came out of yesterday, and I'm not sure if you saw this, but what actually was the most surprising thing was apparently Tyrod Taylor, the pronunciation of his first name is not Tyrod. Did you see that?
I didn't pay attention to it, but yeah, I saw it on Twitter. Someone, I guess, going over the enunciation of it, and I got to tell you, I don't know if I cared.
I think that that is a fair assessment. I mean, we are quite far down this road. I will try to go with Tyrod. I'm okay with it. No problem with it. Again, it's just, to go this far, that feels kind of wild. Now, before we actually do get to the starters, A.J. McCarron, broken collarbone in this game. So he looks like he is going to be out, certainly, of the race between Peterman versus Allen. And I actually thought that McCarron was going to be the week one starter for this football team. Nathan Peterman's actually looked all right. I feel like I know the answer. I'm going to ask it anyway. Does knowing McCarron is not going to be this team starter going into the season change your outlook on many or any of the Buffalo Bills?
No. I want nothing to do with Buffalo. I mean, really. I don't. LeSean McCoy, now he's being, sued in civil court. You know, so we'll see what happens here. This is just a mess. And even if nothing comes out of it as far as NFL suspension-wise, which I doubt it will unless more evidence comes up, it'll probably be more next year anyway. So the problem is, I mean, once again, you're a defensive coordinator. Do you care about the passing game? I mean, like, do you care about it? Oh, they acquired Corey Coleman. Yay. Kelvin Benjamin. Yay. I mean, I would draft Benjamin somewhere around wide receiver four just for a depth wide receiver. I think he's a decent wide receiver, but he's in a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if I cared who was starting there. McCarron, I don't think ever got enough love. I think Cincinnati should have given him a shot to see if he could have been better than Dalton, who's really nothing special when you think about it. Now he's gone. He's got the collarbone. He'll be on IR, I would imagine. I mean, maybe we'll see him somewhere in midseason. Peterman. I once again, it's one bad game. We're all judging off the disaster that happened against the Chargers last year. You know, so maybe he that's unfair, but it's certainly not a I don't know how you sell it to your fan base. I truly don't, Kev. And that's part of this game, right? You gotta sell seats, you gotta sell tickets, you gotta sell merchandise and drinks and all this other stuff. How do you sell Peterman to your fan base? You know, Allen has looked okay. Looked pretty good yesterday, regardless of what Jalen Ramsey thinks. Don't get me wrong, that was a great, great column by Ramsey. It was a fun read. Everybody just sucked, according to Ramsey. Some people didn't suck. That's really the best he got. Some people don't suck, but most suck. So good for you, Jalen. Nice to see somebody speak his mind there. Although I got a funny feeling when you return to the team after your suspension, Tom Coughlin will be speaking his mind to you. That being said, I think Allen is going to be the starter. And I think a lot of this is just a smokescreen with Peterman. I think they know Allen is the quarterback of the future. And once again, this comes down to if you think he's ready. Because the Buffalo Bills certainly aren't playing for anything this year. It's a damn good thing they broke that non-playoff streak last year, because they're not sniffing the playoffs this year. Mm. They're not. So I think it comes down to, once again, you want to start Peterman because Allen's not ready week one? I don't have a problem with that. You know, even though Peterman's a young quarterback himself, you know he's not the quarterback of the future. You want him to take a beating? Fine. You know, now that McCarron's out, fine. But as soon as Allen's ready, and whatever that is, he has to be in there. All right? This is what you drafted him for. You know, you made the big production. He has a strong arm. We want him playing in Buffalo, so we took him, blah, blah, blah. As soon as he's ready, which I think is sooner rather than later. I don't think this is a Week 10 thing. I think this is, if you don't start Week 1, the first thing I would look at is Wednesday bye. You know, if that works out, we get him a couple of extra practice weeks. I don't have an issue with that either. But he has to be in there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was you and I who discussed this already, their schedule. It's not good as far as who they're facing in the beginning of the year. They get Baltimore, Chargers, Vikings. Maybe you want Peterman in there for those three. Take his beating there. You know, and you got Green Bay in week four. Not a great defense, but it's in Green Bay. Then you got Tennessee and Houston. Boy. I mean, they're facing some really tough defenses to start off this. Maybe it's week seven, but they're at Indianapolis. Well, I'm starting on the road, but it's at Indianapolis. You're not going to get a better road start than at Indianapolis, a team with no defense. If you wait till the next week, it's Monday night. I don't think you want him starting making his first start Monday night against New England. That would seem to be silly to me. And then you go, they got Chicago. Then they got the Jets in week 10, but it's at the Jets. I don't think there's a perfect situation here. If they don't have their bye to week 11, so I don't think you want to wait that long. Then even if you did, guess who they're playing after their bye? Oh, it's Jacksonville. You know, good luck to Buffalo this year. In my mind, though, because the schedule is so tough, mm-hmm. if he's ready to go week one, I don't want to say throwing him to the wolves, but if he's ready to go, there's no point in the schedule where you see 2 or 3 weeks in a row against bad defenses. At no point. You see, you might just let him go week one and see what happens here.
And I am going to ask you who you think between Allen and Baker has a better chance, or who do you think will see the field first, but I want to touch on a couple of other things that you mentioned. Let me start with the Kelvin Benjamin. Now, Benjamin, again, not in a great situation. And I would say that he is in a worse situation than Devontae Parker, strictly speaking, quarterback and offense-wise as a whole. I think the Dolphins offense has a higher upside and just a better situation than what they have in Buffalo. But it would be hypocritical to not mention that Kelvin Benjamin is the 44th wide receiver off the board. And if I can bang the table that Devontae Parker at 42 as a team's leading target getter would be valuable, well, Kelvin Benjamin at 44 as a team's potential leader in targets is valuable. Now, yes, those targets are not super encouraging, but I also think at the moment, We've seen better things from Kelvin Benjamin than Devontae Parker. They certainly have had better off seasons, even though Kelvin Benjamin and his whole exchange with Cam Newton wasn't a shining moment. He still caught a touchdown that game. Devontae Parker has been quite a mess. So I think that that is one thing I will say, George, and I will toss it back to you, is, you know, Kelvin Benjamin at 44, Devontae Parker at 42, in terms of wide receiver, they're very, very close. Which one of those guys do you think you would prefer?
Oh, man, that's not easy. There's a reason they're that close, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at my rankings to see where I have these two guys. I'm pretty sure, knowing me, I have Benjamin ahead, and I think that's where I would go, because Benjamin and Parker's more of a big play guy, which is obviously could be a bonus, but Tannehill hasn't been able to hit him. He just hasn't been able to find him consistently throughout the years, and he's always hurt. He's hurt now. You know, Benjamin, we don't know what kind of chemistry he's going to have with any of these quarterbacks, really, if it's Allen or if it's Peterman. But I have Benjamin at 44 as well. So I'm going to go Benjamin because I think at the very least he's the red zone guy. Yeah, I think it's really, if a touchdown, it's either Benjamin or it's Charles Clay, the big targets there in the red zone. I think that's the way it's going to work out there. So give me Kelvin Benjamin. I don't love either guy, mind you. Mm-hmm. I truly don't here. I have no doubt, really, that if you were to put them both on the same team, I'd probably go Parker. I think he is the better receiver, but I don't think he's immensely better. They're different types of receivers. Benjamin's more, like I said, the big target, wide wingspan, touchdown guy. Parker is more of a speed guy, get down the field, make some big plays. But I just trust Benjamin more because of the touchdowns. I always look for that. Same thing I look at running backs when two running backs are close. Who do I think is going to be more of a touchdown guy? Benjamin in this case.
You know, I agree with you that I think Parker is the better wide receiver. But if you switched the two, if Kelvin was in Miami and you had Parker in Buffalo, I would still prefer Kelvin Benjamin just because the offseason that Parker has had right now has been abysmal. I mean, you mentioned the finger, and I've seen Kelvin Benjamin catch a touchdown this preseason. I'm not putting a ton of stock in it. I just know that he's out there, and I think that if he were in Miami, I would feel more confident in him being the target leader there than I feel right now in that crown going to Devontae Parker. Let me ask you also about LeSean McCoy, because you mentioned him as well and just kind of all of the off-field concerns. He was a guy, when I was putting together the best ball shares, I was kind of hoping the number wasn't too high, and I had a decent bit of him. But I have not drafted him since that situation. Speaking strictly fantasy, I want no part of it. He was already someone that was, I felt, at least for me, I will speak on my behalf, that I was drafting solely based on touches. Talent is there, but the offensive line, abysmal. Receiving core, abysmal. Quarterback situation, the worst in all of football. So, I don't care how talented you are. You could put Le'Veon Bell back there. He's going to fall back a couple because the surrounding pieces are atrocious. Now, a murky, muddy situation where we don't necessarily know what's going to happen. I haven't touched LeSean McCoy sensed this news.
I don't have an A-League either. And I think you brought up an important thing there. This has really nothing to do with his legal situation. That just hurts it. I didn't want much to do with him before that. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, for me, you look at this, and even if Allen starts, or Peterman, by the way, I always look at, if I'm a defensive coordinator, what am I doing? I'm stopping LeSean McCoy. It's really that simple to me. I don't think the passing game can beat me. You know, they don't have a true speed threat to get over the top here. You know, I know Josh Allen, if he starts, which is a big if, yeah, he could throw the ball, 70 yards in the air probably too, but I don't know how accurate it's going to be. I don't know if they have a receiver to get by me anyway. Sean McCoy. I'm a big believer in how Bill Belichick coaches defense. And what he generally does is he takes away the number one option of the other team. Takes it away. Beat me with your second best. I truly love that. And LeSean McCoy, it's easy. We know he's the number one option there. Let's force anyone else but LeSean McCoy to beat me. Plus, Chris Ivory's there. Does that mean McCoy is no longer going to score his own touchdown? He's going to get vultured over and over again. I would assume it does. They did go away from that last year where McCoy did run his touchdowns in. But now you bring in Ivory. I got to think that's what you're going to use him for, right? I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to me that that's what you will use him for. So assuming that's the case, Where's your value with McCoy? I understand he's a great back, maybe a Hall of Fame back. I get that. But where's your value there to take him as a – I can't take him as running back one. Running back two I can do, but I can't do it in the third round. You know, because of between what I just talked about and his other issues. What if more evidence does come to light? I know we want to keep this fantasy related, but what, come end of September, we do find out more evidence. Oh, he did hire this guy. You know, because whether he did or he didn't, it's an awful big coincidence that the only thing this guy apparently took was the one thing McCoy wanted back. All right? We don't know how true that is, but if it's true, man, good luck trying to convince me that McCoy had nothing to do with that. You know, so what if more evidence comes to light? Then he does get suspended, with the conduct commissioner here. So all these are going to scare me away. If the value's there, Kev, I would still take him. He's there in round five? Okay, fine. I don't have a choice anymore. I'll take the value. But I'm not touching him in round three. Talk to me at the end of round four.
I absolutely agree. It's one of those situations where you have to make me think. And right now, I haven't had to think about it at all. I can't put that type of draft capital into a running back who, also, I remember I was talking to Mike about this. LeSean McCoy has not been a model of health. Now, it's not that he's getting he's gone down every single year. But if you look at the total touches that he accrued last season, and you set that up to be repeated, maybe increased because of the situation, with a significantly worse offensive line, where they had two guys retire and they traded their left tackle so they could get up in a position to draft Josh Allen, how wonderful can anybody feel? It comes off the year last season, 346 carries, or 346 touches, rather, excuse me. So, and I know it is very difficult to predict injury, and I'm not saying that anybody needs to do that, but it's something to keep in the back of the mind where it's just, this is a horrific situation where, even in fifth round, the one thing that is funny, right, when we think draft, right, like you have the real NFL draft, they're drafting all these guys, and you have fantasy. And one thing you hear all the time, they took Darius Geis off their board, or they took Joe Mixon off their board. Like in fantasy, you don't really get a situation like that, but this is about as close as it gets. Where right now it feels like LeSean McCoy is off my board.
I don't know if anyone is ever truly off my board. Mm-hmm. It becomes value related. There are guys who, listen, I know odds are I'm not going to take. But once I said, I don't want McCoy where his ADP is going round three. But if he's there in round five, well, he's mine. Once again, the value's there. It brings me to, you think about quarterbacks. If you read anything I write, or you listen to me on the radio, or whatever, I'm always saying, wait on quarterback, wait on quarterback, wait on quarterback. I don't want to draft my quarterback till round 9, round 10, whatever it might be. Cousins, I'll take Cousins, Luck, Rivers then. But, Aaron Rodgers, for the most part, his ADP is round 3, round 4. But if he's there in round 6, well, now the value's there. And now I might have Aaron Rodgers on my team. So fantasy is all about value. Yes, I don't want A-Rod or I don't want McCoy where they're being drafted now. But if they slip a couple of rounds, then the value's too good. Then I'll take them. It's just, that's why I never take anybody completely off my board.
Yeah, that is the way to do it. We come back, final hour on Fantasy Sports Today, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.